Can I turn things over to you, please?
You very much can, Rob. Thanks very much for doing an excellent job introducing and preparing us for this cyber seminar. And thanks to everyone for joining us. And thanks to Dr. Connor Drake for taking the time to share his work on implementation determinants of a virtual telehealth program for patients with persistently poorly controlled diabetes. We're going to turn it over to him in just a second, but first, one or two announcements from the VC Corps. Thanks, Connor. And so the first one that we have shared via our newsletter already, but our special supplement, HSR-sponsored special supplement on virtual care in the Veteran Health Administration in the Journal for General Internal Medicine is out. The issue is titled Evidence to Advance Access, Engagement, and Outcomes in Virtual Care. And we are really excited about it. It is the culmination of about 2 years of work, 3 years, if you go back all the way to preparation for our state-of-the-art conference in virtual care, which took place in 2022, and you know that we started planning the year before that. So really excited. Congratulations to all the published authors. And thanks again to the many groups of shareholders that helped us reach this point from starting all the way back in 2021. We were planning for the conference and everything, every step of the way that has come since. So the second announcement is just this crowdsource question that we sent out over our listserv just the other day, which is, what are 1 to 3 essential or seminal scholarly articles for the early career investigator interested in virtual care? We received this question a short while ago, and we were really interested in coming up with an answer that drew from the voices of all of the experts in our network. And because this is such a broad question, I think we'll just narrow down a tiny bit, which, we've thought about this, and our core team, when we were preparing for the conference I mentioned a second ago, we put together a few evidence briefs, one for each of those groups of access, engagement, and outcomes that included a lot of sources like systematic reviews and these giant meta-analytic, summary publications that had been put out. But for this, we're really thinking about the thought pieces that introduce a newer researcher to this topic for someone who has not, thought about it too much yet, and less about the evidence landscape itself. So to reach out with an answer to that question, to get access to any of the materials that I have mentioned to this point, and just to interact with us, please feel free to reach out to the contact information that's listed on this slide, VHA Virtual Care Corps at va.gov or at va_VCCorps on Twitter. And we look forward to hearing from you. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Drake, and looking forward to his presentation.
Terrific. Thank you, Naveed, and good morning or afternoon, depending on where you're joining from. And thanks for joining today's seminar. My name is Connor Drake. I'm a research health scientist in the Center of Innovation to Accelerate Discovery and Practice Transformation, or ADAPT, at the Durham VA Healthcare System, and an assistant professor at the Department of Population Health Sciences at the Duke University School of Medicine. And so, just some brief background on me. I'm a health services researcher by training. My methodological focus has been on implementation science. And in terms of subject areas, my work really focuses on virtual care and other emerging technologies to deliver high quality chronic illness care with a focus on diabetes. I'm really interested in how approaches can be responsive to intersecting needs of veterans and their caregivers or care partners. So for example, you know, recognizing that successfully managing diabetes requires a comprehensive approach that addresses both the medical needs and the non-medical needs. So in other words, to achieve better diabetes outcomes, you know, you need to both manage depression if it's in the mix, and it also it's very difficult to manage either if food insecurity is in the mix. So it's with great delight that I'm presenting work today examining implementation determinants of a comprehensive virtual care program for patients with persistent diabetes. And so today we're going to go through this specific research project, give you a little bit of background on challenge and some of the important research that have been done to set the stage for this. I'll present the results, which are qualitative, and build in time for discussion and hopefully also open the floor for comments and feedbacks on sort of future potential research directions as it relates to VA operational priorities. So let me start by just giving some background here, you know, and really setting the stage on persistently poor diabetes mellitus. You know, just to provide a definition, it's a significant health concern. And 10 to 15% of diabetic patients fall in this category of PPDM, and it contributes disproportionately to morbidity, mortality, and expenditures within healthcare systems. It's a real burden, and in the clinical classification is a consistently elevated hemoglobin A1C of over 8.5% for at least 1 year, despite clinic-based management. So in other words, PPDM is used to characterize diabetes that's generally been unresponsive to standard outpatient treatment. And this is attributable to a lot of different reasons. You know, it's because of the limited scope of care in the outpatient setting may not be sufficient to address underlying medical, social, behavioral drivers of PPDM. And that includes a range of self-management activities, including medication adherence, you know, diet, physical activity, and comorbidities. And so it does result in obviously ineffective glycemic control, but also other vascular complications. And so this is really, I think, a population of that's very important, and it's an imperative target population for innovative and strengthened diabetes management programs. And I'll point out that it's high in the VA, just like it is high in the general population. Recent research revealing that it affects nearly 12% of the almost 6 million veterans with diabetes, according to Veterans Health Administration data. So the theory here, and a lot of what I'll be describing, is this belief that by facilitating contact outside of traditional in-person clinical encounters, telehealth could improve outcomes for veterans with PPDM. And telehealth strategies targeting the individual factors underlying poor glycemic control may be preferred than standard clinic-based care. And so, you know, there's belief that an intensified approach that combines multiple strategies into a comprehensive intervention could produce greater improvement. But this has not been universally true in the research that's been done. You know, so these multi-component, more intensive type 2 diabetes interventions have achieved variable results, in some cases not seeing clinical improvements that much greater than standard diabetes telehealth interventions that are offered as standard of care. You know, one trial I would point to would be the Empowered randomized control trial. So, you know, that really lines up background on the comprehensive telehealth approach that I'll be describing, that we've examined in implementation determinants of, which is called Practice DM, which stands for Practical Telemedicine to Improve Control and Engagement for Veterans with Clinic Refractory Diabetes Mellitus. And the as you can see in this figure, hopefully that's clear, you know, the intervention components comprise of telemonitoring, self-management, education and support, diet and activity support, medication management provided in conjunction with these sort of medication managers, and when observed, depression support, you know, so provided in conjunction with a mental health provider. And the home telehealth infrastructure, the acronym HT, delivers the five intervention components during these sort of scheduled telephonic encounters. So the standard encounter frequency is every 2 weeks, but may be extended to 4 weeks depending on whether veterans are achieving their goal hemoglobin A1C. So there's a lot more detail about the program and intervention itself in the parent study that I'm going to share. But I think what's really important to highlight here is that it's a team-based approach that really leverages existing and established infrastructure, staffing, and technical resources within the Veterans Health Administration. So I think that's a really exciting from an implementation perspective. There was a lot of thought and care into designing this program in a way that it can be implemented in scale with existing VA infrastructure. And I'll also mention that it is, as I, you know, to put a finer point on it, it is a quite adaptive, individualized approach, consistent with American Diabetes Association guidelines. Hemoglobin A1C goals were individualized based on age, comorbidities, and risk. But most participants targeted a hemoglobin A1C of under 7 or under 8. So let's get into sort of the parent trial here. You know, that was a parallel arm randomized control trial where veterans were randomized to receive standard home telehealth, telemonitoring, and care coordination services that are consistent with best practices for standard of care and part of routine practices for VA home telehealth nurses. So no specific training required for this particular approach. And participants were asked to transmit blood glucose data daily through the, again, standard issued home telehealth equipment that links glucose meter and a home telehealth device for automatic uploading of data from that meter and associated protocols to monitor this group and then compile pre-appointment blood glucose data for review from providers and communicating sort of values that might be out of range. And so the practice DM intervention, as I described before, you know, this was a much more robust program and intervention. So, you know, the parent trial had some quite interesting, and it's a terrific paper. I've put the screenshot of the title and study team on this slide, and it had a very, you know, quite robust finding around hemoglobin A1C improvements being greater in the practice DM arm and greater improvements at 12 months for diabetes distress, diabetes self-care, activity self-management, and self-efficacy without differences between arms in BMI or depression. Different from previous trials that have been done, there was a quite significant difference, and it's essentially the practice DM group saw a hemoglobin A1C change of 1.6%, which is quite dramatic. And the standard telehealth group saw a change of a little less than 1%, which is also a good clinically significant improvement. The other piece I'll highlight here is that the telehealth cost for this practice DM and comprehensive approach cost an additional $1,519 per patient per year to deliver, which is a quite modest increase in terms of cost above and beyond the standard telehealth approach. And one other final thing I'll point out, because I think it does relate to implementation, which I'm going to dive into with the study results I'm presenting, is that this is a great paper, and there's an exploratory descriptive analysis in the supplement section of it, where they looked, the study team looked at sort of a heterogeneous effect for the patients that completed more than 20 encounters. In other words, most of the program, which was most of the sample, about two-thirds of the practice DM group, and they saw an almost 2% reduction in hemoglobin A1C, which was one of the primary outcomes of interest. So that's certainly quite encouraging. And again, in a literature where the effect of these more comprehensive high-intensity diabetes interventions have not been borne out to have much higher levels of clinical effectiveness, this trial really sort of, suggests that a more comprehensive approach can be very successful at achieving better glycemic control amongst this high-risk population. And so let me talk a little bit about the research I'll be presenting related to this parent trial. Before this trial, beyond just the uncertain effectiveness of these more comprehensive approaches, there are other barriers that have hindered implementation of these more comprehensive telehealth programs for higher risk patients with diabetes and PPDM in particular. So these are things for those that do a lot of work in this space, won't surprise anybody. It has to do with over-reliance on research-funded staff or resources, insufficient EHR integration, and an uncertain reimbursement or financial landscape for these more intensive approaches. So there was really a need here for finding approaches that were, on the one hand, more effective than standard of care for home telehealth, but then also were explicitly designed for feasible implementation. And so, and I think this is a challenge sometimes we have in intervention design, is that we, as researchers, can focus on making sure that we're designing a program that can be effective, and often not focusing enough on the implementation barriers and facilitators that can influence a program like Practice DM to become part of routine care for, in this case, veterans with PPDM. And so here, the idea of my work is to really use the evaluation of Practice DM intervention and use the lens of implementation science to really start to understand and gain insights into the implementation determinants or factors that might have hindered or facilitated implementation outcomes of interest. So things like acceptability, reach, adoption, being able for the program to be sustained in routine care settings. And so this kind of implementation science informed line of inquiry could support opportunities for intervention refinement or adaptation. So with the goal of trying to support its timely translation into real-world VA settings. So the primary objectives of this study is to qualitatively assess these implementation determinants. And so what we are doing is a secondary qualitative data analysis using interview data from the main randomized comparative effectiveness clinical trial to assess these implementation considerations. And I think that, the larger goal here really is that, we want to better understand how to optimally implement, scale, and disseminate more effective diabetes delivery to improve outcomes amongst these PPDM veterans who are at highest risk. So to dive in just a little bit more on the methods that we used, from the main trial, there was qualitative data that it was obtained through interviews with 20 purposely sampled diverse and information-rich veterans who received the Practice DM intervention. This was 10 subjects from each study site that were invited to participate and share their perspective on the Practice DM intervention following the 12-month study. And the data, this qualitative data was collected through phone-based semi-structured interviews. Participants were consented and the interviews were recorded and transcribed verbatim by approved staff, by approved VA staff. And there was a focus on, in the interview guide, on extracting information regarding barriers and facilitators to implementation. Importantly, there were also interviews with, in a similar format, phone-based semi-structured interviews with two home telehealth nurses that participated in delivering the Practice DM intervention at each site, as well as two administrators or medication managers at each site who were also involved with medication management adjustments for the Practice DM program. For our analysis, we used a direct content analysis approach known as Allison Hamilton's rapid qualitative analysis methodology. And so we used a qualitative codebook that included core definitions, categorizations, encoding decision rules that we developed a priori for this project using domains of the health equity implementation framework. And the data was analyzed and reduced into matrices. And this is a common approach for a lot of implementation research questions. And I would like to talk a little bit about the health equity implementation framework before we dive into results. You know, this, I think, is a very useful framework for implementation research questions. And I'll highlight that it is a framework, right? Not a theory or model that posits causal relationships, but rather sort of provides a comprehensive view of how an intervention and implementation works in practice with regard to healthcare disparities and vulnerable populations, and to really do a contextual analysis, really understand the contextual factors that support or hinder implementation, in this case, analyzing existing barriers or facilitators to adoption of Practice DM intervention in the VHA, the Veterans Health Administration setting. And this is going a little deep, but it's sort of interesting background that the HEIF comprised of two separate frameworks when it was developed by Dr. Ava Woodward in the VA, and it brought together the IPARIS framework, which accounts for multiple levels of implementation determinants. And it also incorporates the healthcare disparities frameworks, which is very useful for identifying underlying drivers of health disparities, again, in multiple levels of the patient, the provider, the clinical encounter in the health system. So HEIF was really a great fit for this study because of how it accounts for multi-level implementation factors and disparities, and really highlights implementation considerations that are specific to vulnerable populations. And so these two frameworks really complement each other well and work synergistically, I think. The results are organized around some of these HEIF domains and across these levels, including the clinical encounter, which the font is a little bit small, but you can see in the middle. I'll define each of these as we move through. So hopefully this is also a nice introduction to this framework in case it's a useful lens for other lines of inquiry that you may be involved with or practice priorities. And so, let us start with the results. And the way I've organized this is to start from the middle, sort of the patient provider clinical encounter level, and then to move out to other factors, ending with at the societal context level. And so first we have the clinical encounter, and I've provided definitions for these. These are not the full definitions from the code book, but just to be able to give some flavor and sense for how these were defined and operationalized for this particular analysis. And for the clinical encounter, this really referred to the interaction between recipients, in this case, the veteran and the provider, in many cases, the home telehealth nurse. And it includes aspects of the practice DM intervention that are specific to that clinical encounter, sort of like communication or the how it was done. And what I've done here to try to differentiate between findings is put them in columns for barriers and facilitators in the warrior text. Hopefully that's clear, that text underneath the barriers column. Those were barriers revealed from the staff and provider interviews and that analysis. And then the other font is from patients. And so some of the barriers we saw related to the clinical encounter related to this just being a higher intensity, more comprehensive program. So that was quite adaptive and tailored to the needs of the specific veteran. So it could be an unpredictable program to deliver in terms of call durations and sort of scheduling for that and integrating it with existing panels of veterans was challenging and something that outside of the study and trial environment would have to be accounted for. Documentation was also time consuming, and these are the barriers. And there was a little bit of sort of heterogeneity of some of the delivery of different educational content or coaching or these check-ins. So some of this kind of cut both ways, the barriers and facilitators, but sometimes could be a barrier if there was a sense that there was lack of standardization in the approach how veterans were engaged as part of this program. The facilitators here were that these aspects of the clinical encounters, again, the sort of how it was done was very complementary to existing diabetes care. This is something that we saw across the different levels of the HEIF framework, but even in the clinical encounter, it was really amplifying and reinforcing some of the education and self-management support that was part of existing diabetes care in primary care within the PACT. And so, and I think another thing that really came through was the approach of the nurse encounters really was well received by veterans. There was really strong rapport being built in the virtual environment, which I think is really that relationship piece was really critical to veterans participating. And really, the structure of these types of encounters were designed to promote greater patient accountability, or this is what we heard from both veterans and providers. And to the scheduling piece, I think the home telehealth nurse really put this in a little in more clarity and with this quote of saying, a lot of days I would work later so I could catch them after work, as you know, or trying to catch them on their lunch break, which with my lunch break. And I think that really speaks to sort of how a more comprehensive approach and more frequent contact, you know, some of the scheduling concerns and challenges, though not unique to practice DM, could be a little bit more prevalent and needed to be navigated. And so as we move to the next health equity implementation framework domain focused on patient factors, we'll hear some of these themes echoing through from this domain as well. And just to define it briefly, these are factors that are specific to the patient's situation. This could include beliefs, this could have, or sort of perception of the effectiveness of practice DM. It could also include an individual's sort of specific situation, their preferences for communication and engagement, and attitudes towards team or the institution, but are really quite specific to the patient's perspective and their willingness to engage with the program and sort of acceptability of the program. I think this is, for this framework can be challenging to disentangle what's operating at the individual patient level and what's, really upstream of that when it comes to larger systems or policies or societal influence. So I think you'll see how this can sometimes cut across multiple domains. But on the patient level, you know, some of the barriers we heard from providers was that patient availability could be challenging. People have busy professional and personal life commitments, and that emotional distress with a program that's more comprehensive, I think this resurfaced more often and could become a common barrier to serving and educating, supporting patients. And then this is something that we'll revisit in the societal influence domain, but the engagement of the program is really influenced by the holistic situation of the patient. And so this means sort of cultural norms, socioeconomic situation, et cetera. We heard from patients that one of the most challenging parts of the program was the sort of some of the lifestyle changes associated with diet and nutrition. We heard about patient-specific stressors that could divert attention away from diabetes management and engagement with this program. The facilitators here are that the care team really felt that, had this perception that the telehealth improved patient access. And I think this is a theme we hear in the VA, and that this was really key to driving engagement with the program. There was also a perception from the providers, the nurse, the medication managers, that there were spillover benefits from participation to engagement with other VA services and with primary care. So we'll talk a little bit about that too as we zoom out into other systems and look at the larger health system context and how Practice DM might have influenced some of these engagement with other services or with their PCP. And patients really did perceive this program as effective and felt more empowered to engage with the health system productively. And we also heard from veterans that this was also complementary to the role of their care partners or family members or caregivers. And it really, they're really focused on the needs of the individual veteran with PPDM. There were benefits to being able to engage a care partner or caregiver who might be involved with different aspects of accountability and self-management support. And so I think that was a facilitator we heard quite consistently from veterans that participated. When we look at the provider factors, some of the barriers we heard from providers with delivering this more comprehensive approach is that the actual approach for certain veterans has implications for the skill set of the providers. In other words, for veterans with lower levels of engagement or readiness to change or engagement in certain self-management activities, these kind of higher touch motivational interviewing or health coaching may be necessary and not yet memorialized in some of the training protocols. And then the team-based approach to Practice DM didn't mean that medication managers were making adjustments and in regular communication with the home telehealth nurse as part of the team, but this was different from many med managers who are used to direct contact with patients. It meant that there was more of a reliance on communication with the nurse and just making sure that, the information they were receiving was timely and accurate. So a potential implementation barrier could be breakdowns in those communication channels. And then from the provider perspective, wasn't just hard to schedule for patient availability, as we heard in the patient factors and the clinical encounter, but that from a provider perspective, fitting this into an existing patient panel was also, coded into the provider factor. But the facilitators here was that this team-based approach really created a quote-unquote collaborative harmony with this program. And the nurses really started to build rapport and offer a higher touch patient-centered care around emotional support, encouragement, and accountability while maintaining a very professional approach. And you know, the provider's ability to be able to tailor educational content was very well received by patients. And patients also, I think, found it quite slick and impressive that a lot of things were happening behind the scenes when it came to medication adjustments and other care team processes were being perceived as very seamless from the veteran perspective. And then to this team-based approach, I think the medication manager quote helps sort of understand both the exciting promise of it, but then the sort of barrier to implementation with this type of model, which is that, you know, the quote is, I might want to interact with that nurse or directly on a scheduled basis in the beginning just to get to know each other's practice style. And I thought that was an interesting insight into, you know, what it means to be able to deliver virtual care in this team-based approach. It requires sort of establishing those types of communication channels and understanding each other's practice patterns so that to deliver that type of seamless experience for veterans and being responsive and clear in any types of medication adjustments or changes in approach. And so now we're moving to the characteristics of the innovation. This is different from the clinical encounter because we're not talking so much on how or the delivery of it, but we're talking about what was delivered, the actual commentary or feedback, barriers and facilitators related to the intervention components itself. You know, and again, as a reminder from the previous slide, that included telemonitoring, self-management support, diet activity support, medication management, and depression support when needed. And so again, we hear this as a common theme across the different HEIF domains, but the time intensive nature of it was for these different components challenging to fit within a standard patient panel. And there were certain, there needed to be a match between the intervention components and the interventionist, in this case, home telehealth nurse skill set, which might have implications for workforce development and training. And again, we heard, you know, as this specific component around medication management, that this was different to have the sort of lacking this in this direct contact with patients. You know, some of these components around medication management from the patient's perspective, the barrier was that the program could give a sense of feeling shamed if that they were skipping the sort of monitoring around blood sugar reading. So I think that was an important consideration to think about how to reduce that feeling of shame or stigma around taking blood sugar readings and reporting them. And sometimes, even though many veterans like the seamless nature of medication adjustments, there could be, for some veterans, this could be happening quite frequently if their underlying condition was changing, and in some cases could seem sort of frequent and unexpected. So I think, you know, we'll talk a little bit more about implications for program refinement or adaptation or implementation strategies, but this could be a nice opportunity to build out protocols for making sure veterans are fully aware in their regular contact or communication. And then sometimes diet and nutrition education seemed unrealistic to veterans or inconsistent with what they had heard from other external information about diabetes management or from other program offerings within the VA. And, you know, there was also a sense from veterans that this program would benefit from more exercise or physical activity opportunities. It's important to also contextualize this trial that this was happening during the early onset of the COVID pandemic, which I think we'll talk a little bit more about the societal influence, but really did also play into some of the lack of exercise or physical activity opportunities, especially during periods of stay-at-home orders. And even though we heard that there was a facilitator of sometimes caregivers being pulled into the part of these calls and contact with the practice DM study nurse, the home telehealth nurse, we also heard that there was probably more opportunity to do that, and that that was good, and there could have been more, and a barrier to implementation was that that wasn't as, could have been more rigorously pursued. And yes, as is the case for virtual care delivery, there were sometimes technical difficulties related to blood glucose monitoring and reporting and EHR integration that had to be navigated in real time. And it's not on the slide, but I should point out that that was not a very prevalent concern, but it was raised by a few veterans. And then facilitators, you know, again, the five components really bring together a multidisciplinary team-based approach. The team really felt like practice DM leveraged the data that's being collected through this telemonitoring more effectively. And veterans really talked about these different characteristics really being these different components of the program really being complementary and motivational. And it really, you know, invited the veteran to take on an important role in their care, which was seen as a facilitator. And you know, the contact and the rapport, as we mentioned, the provider factors really gave the sense of social support that's enabled through this type of frequent contact. And so now we're coming back out, now we're sort of coming from the middle of the health equity implementation framework, and we're into the more of the contextual, bigger picture factors, not so much the clinical encounter or the patient or provider factors. And the context domain really speaks to, you know, it can include things around the inner context of the specific structure of a clinic or a medical center, including the leadership and other formal policies or practice patterns. And then the outer contextual factors we included to relate to larger VA policies and interacting systems with the health system, you know, and this could include, but primarily within the healthcare system or sort of community-based referrals connected to the healthcare system. And so, you know, one barrier we heard that I think has implications for scaling and implementing this program was that there was a perceived lack of fit or standardized integration with primary care and specifically the medical home impact workflows. And like we mentioned before, some of these engagements in other words, they sort of lacked standardization for reporting back to the care team, the existing care team. And this lack of standardization, as we mentioned before, wasn't just for the delivery of the intervention itself, it was also lack of standardization for how to best engage auxiliary members of the existing healthcare team and the PACT. You know, there were obviously profound barriers, many reported by veterans, that were related to the health system during the COVID-related disruptions, and specifically to other diabetes management support programs that were otherwise previously offered and that were disrupted or seized for a period of time due to COVID disruptions. You know, veterans also talked about, you know, in this larger, where this practice DM program fits within the larger health system and with their other clinic-based services. They said that one barrier could relate to, you know, there wasn't a lot of ways to move outside of the practice DM intervention to interact with other veterans with diabetes for peer support or social support. And while that has implications for the design of the program itself, it's also, you know, we saw as a potential barrier to this larger context of interacting with other diabetes programs or self-management support programs. The facilitators here was that despite some of the COVID disruptions to existing diabetes management resources in the VA and in the community, there was an effort to try to use Practice DM to connect veterans to existing services and programs. Where PCP communication did occur, it was often productive and valued by, according to the clinical providers interviewed, where it did happen, even though it wasn't a standardized approach, it was productive and sort of to pull the primary care team into this. And so they were aware of what was happening and really just, you know, that would dovetail into the next point that it was complementary, but not a substitute for primary care. And I think within the larger context of the VA healthcare system, veterans did report feeling better equipped to navigate the health system and seek out other opportunities to support better diabetes management. So I think that was a very encouraging finding, certainly a facilitator for the approach. And then finally, we zoom out and really, and I think this is what's really important and valuable about the health equity implementation framework, is the ability to look at a more of a systems level, policy level implementation determinants that relate to how effective this program might be offered in routine care settings. And so this domain really encompasses larger structural factors. This could include things like stigma, societal expectations, the political climate, where patients could be subjected to racism or discrimination based on their identity, and also economic factors that shape the day-to-day lived experience of veterans with PPDM and their and these sort of social needs that can intersect with their diabetes medical needs. And so, you know, this can cut both ways, right? Veterans could gain employment or have certain economic circumstances improve and really be a boon to their diabetes management, but it's also could be a barrier related to an unmet social need that could intersect in a toxic way with their diabetes. And so I think one barrier that came up from the providers that we interviewed was that there wasn't a built-in mechanism as part of Practice DM to address food insecurity or other social needs like social isolation that influence diabetes management. To the extent this could be addressed or referrals could be made, it was sort of at the discretion and just the individual knowledge of that practitioner or study nurse. Obviously, a through line of this is that on the societal level, there were all sorts of disruptions socially, economically. During COVID-19, it was a very difficult and continues to be a difficult pandemic. And then the patients reported stigma with their insulin use. And while this isn't, you know, it's a difficult barrier to address, it is something to be aware of, that some of the self-management support could be sensitive to, is some of the stigma around insulin use. Some of the facilitators we heard from providers and staffs was that the trial incentives for participation really did support uptake and engagement in the program, you know, sort of suggesting that maybe some of the lower, you know, patients that might have been less engaged and less interested in an opportunity like this were willing to try it and stick with it. And the incentives for trial participation really helped with that. Virtual delivery, as we know, one of the important facilitators of it is that it can mitigate transportation barriers, or whether it be for veterans in rural settings or for those that just have existing transportation barriers, lack of public transportation or other transportation options. And I think, you know, this facilitator, again, about navigating the health system and community resources also showed up in our societal influence domain. And so with just a little bit of time left, because I do want to hear if there are questions or any feedback on some of these very preliminary findings. We just finished our qualitative analysis recently. But I think some of the key takeaways we're seeing from this work is that, you know, some of this work really expands on existing literature on these comprehensive diabetes telehealth interventions. Like I had mentioned at the beginning, this over-reliance on research-funded staff and infrastructure, insufficient EHR integration of patient data, and use of that patient data in a clinically meaningful way, an uncertain sort of fee-for-service financing structures for it. Our study really tries to expand on this literature to kind of break down where how these types of implementation factors can influence and be influential across multiple different levels. And I think I'd also highlight again that the the comprehensive approach of practice DM costs a modest amount more over the 12-month period per patient per year to deliver. And so, you know, I think a takeaway here is that, you know, this is, again, a focus on creating a comprehensive approach that's feasible to scale, but further cost-effectiveness research is warranted. And I think this role of a nurse and really in these more comprehensive care paradigms being in an almost advocate-type role or a coach-type role was a big facilitator for the program, but, you know, might be difficult to protocolize and might be difficult and might need program or intervention-specific training and workforce development investments. And then the comprehensive telehealth intervention does not account, it's comprehensive, but it does not account for all the contributors to PPDM, including the social determinants of health or patient-level unmet social needs. But I think related to this is that some of the incentives might be a strategy to provide resources for engaging in the program and might mitigate some of these challenges around social and economic drivers of engagement and health. And then, you know, one piece that didn't make it here, it's a full slide, but I think this, it's going to be a really important takeaway from this, I think, is how to best integrate with the PACT and the patient, you know, the patient-centered medical home experience. I think there's different schools of thoughts about the level of integration where it's not cumbersome to primary care providers, but that there's a line of sight between the PACT and these types of more comprehensive programs that can provide intensified support outside of traditional clinic-based diabetes management. And so I think that's going to be a really important finding of the implication of this work, is sort of finding that right balance of, you know, a parallel comprehensive approach that's meant to be complementary and amplify the benefits of and the goals of the PACT, and sort of what is the right level of line of sight between these different care models to improve alignment, communication, and to create that kind of seamless veteran patient care experience. Some really important limitations to highlight here. I'll say very briefly, you know, we need to be careful about generalizing results to other non-veteran populations. I think the strength of this study that it was based out of Durham and Richmond and had a very diverse patient population, but it might not, we should be careful about generalizing to non-Veterans Health Administration clinical settings. And of course, I think any research done during this period, you have to sort of be careful about generalizability with COVID-19. And with our qualitative analysis, you know, a little less focused on external validity, I think, you know, but it is still worth highlighting here. And then I think future directions of this work, and I welcome comments or questions from others, but I think, you know, there's understanding the implementation context of a program like this and comprehensive diabetes interventions like this really lends itself to understanding the specific implementation strategies that need to be developed to stand this up in routine practice as part of routine care. You know, we can do things around nudging providers to refer to the program, and but it also might include strategies like de-implementation. This might have to take the place of certain programs or offerings to fit within existing infrastructure and care team bandwidth. So, and then something that's a little bit, you know, I got to admit sort of plays to some of my research interests is that but we did hear it in the from veterans and from providers is that there may be opportunities to exist for integrating other complementary interventions that can address some of these unmet social needs that Practice DM is not designed to address. And two that I would point out here would be food insecurity and social isolation, right? So I think social isolation we heard about quite a bit, and food insecurity as well. And there are really excellent peer support programs or sort of social care interventions to address food insecurity that could warrant consideration on how to protocolize referral to them or how they might be integrated within a part of this comprehensive care model. And so that's the end of my presentation. I'm so grateful for the opportunity to present this work. I'm very grateful to the VC Corps for funding the work through a VC Corps Associate Investigator Award. I need to acknowledge incredible methodological and subject matter expertise contributions of Tierra Lanford, Maddie Eldridge, Zoe Waddell, and my mentorship team, David Edelman, Leah Zulig, Matt Crowley. It's such a privilege being a researcher in the VA and being a junior researcher and having such a rich mentorship environment to do implementation research like this in just a very applied way. So it's been a wonderful experience. So I will pause there and kick it over to you, Rob, if we have time for a question or two before we wrap up the hour. So I think I see some. Yeah, go ahead, Rob.
I'm sorry, I just was going to ask. Remind me, are we reading the questions or am I?
Oh, I think I just found them, so I can. So, is the home telehealth EMP the standard VA or diabetes, or was it customized for this program? No, this is a great question. Thanks, Megan. No, it was designed to be the standard national VA. In other words, it was an attempt to sort of define. Instead of just saying usual care, is meant to define a very structured home telehealth diabetes program that's routinely offered. So it was the standard national, if I understand your question correctly, about the sort of quote-unquote control group or the group that Practice DM was being compared against in the parent trial. And then the other question here, also from Megan, was did the home telehealth care coordinations have this CDCES credential or other unique training and credentials in diabetes management? I would need to double check on this. To my knowledge, I don't want to comment on that, but I would be happy if you want to reach out to me to get you more information, because there was, in addition to the main trial paper, there was a protocol paper that really specifies the exact training and credentials of the home telehealth nurse and medication manager. So I don't want to give you the wrong information and look it up here on the spot. Was there any data collected for the A1C levels, those who participate in the program? If so, how did it compare? I see. So how did the A1C levels of those that participate in the trial compare to the patients with PPDM that did not participate in the trial? I can say that the average hemoglobin A1C for those in the trial at baseline for the overall was 10.2. Okay. And so and in each arm, the comprehensive approach, it was 10 point in the Practice DM arm, it was 10.1. And then in the telemonitoring care coordination arm, the standard diabetes telehealth arm, it was 10.2. And just to elaborate a little further on that, the average BMI, which was pretty similar across arms, was 34.8. And so I don't want to speculate as to how close that is to the average hemoglobin A1C of the population of PPDM, but I think that those are elevated hemoglobin A1Cs. And so I would imagine pretty typical of the PPTM population that you would hope this program would get rolled out to serve. Excellent questions. And I'm so glad to have had the opportunity to share this work. Please stay in touch and feel free to message me or reach out on Twitter or social media. I'd love to stay connected.
Thank you, Dr. Drake. Do you have any closing comments?
No closing comments for me. I think this is an incredibly thorough presentation. We're at the 1 p.m. mark, but I encourage folks to reach out to Dr. Drake with additional questions, and hopefully everyone had a chance to catch the VC Corp contact info and can reach out to us for any of the materials that I'd mentioned before, and to contribute and get in touch and sign up for our newsletter. Thanks, everyone.
Great. Thank you all. Attendees, when I close the webinar momentarily, you will be shown a short survey. Please do take a few moments and provide answers to those questions. Thanks again, everybody. Have a good day.
Thanks, Rob.